The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Good morning, Anton.
Brendan, to what extent do events like this, do traumatic events, ripple out beyond the individual and the family to the broader community?
So traumatic events like this have an enormous impact, as you say, both on the individuals involved, their families, then their immediate communities. And clearly each person involved in this is going through their own psychological process of adjustment and various kinds of difficulty, none more so, of course, than the victim herself. But in terms of the community, there is also this idea of collective social trauma. And one of the big problems with it, one of the challenges presented at community level, is the source of support, that is the community, the friends, the social networks, they tend to get undermined by an event like this. So, for example, in this case, there are some, I think it's 51 people on trial for this. Some of them have been in custody, some are not in custody, and there are more people who have not been identified yet. So the, if you like, the network of involvement is quite vast and quite complex because these are people living in a relatively small area mostly. So there is this social community or collective trauma that's working its way through as well.
How does a community and how do individuals within a community best deal with that kind of trauma?
Well, people are dealing with their own trauma and attempting to do so using their usual mechanisms, you know, their families, their friends, their coping mechanisms, and maybe some professional support. But what's particularly corrosive in this kind of situation is when a lot of that support has been undermined by people who might be suspected of involvement or an even wider network of people who might have known to some degree what was going on and chosen to turn a blind eye. So this makes it incredibly complex at community level to deal with these things. I suppose the advice tends to be to still to rely on networks of close friends, networks of family, and also to really to try and do, if you like, physically and mentally healthy activities. You know, it's very difficult to think your way through something like this. You almost have to watch it unfold, but focus on other things that create mental health, like various kinds of activities, various community groups and things like this. It is not always possible to think this through to its solution, particularly while a trial, which is likely to be very, very long, is still ongoing.
Is there a standard method by which people process trauma? I'm thinking an equivalent to the Kubler-Ross model. Are there phases that you go through, whether it be community trauma or personal?
So there's a lot of variety, and the sort of Kubler-Ross model of grieving, you know, really those stages tend not to occur in sequence. There tends to be a mix of denial, bargaining, anger, depression, and acceptance. And we see very similar things at individual level. You know, some people, if you like, bargaining with what happened. And what this means is it's a kind of a magical thinking where you think, well, maybe that just couldn't have happened as described. So acceptance can be slow to come. But there are people at different stages of this, particularly in this kind of situation. I think what is important to note is collective trauma and community trauma differs a great deal. So, for example, we've all been through a community trauma called COVID, but this was less conflictual. This was pretty much blamed on a virus, which is true. We did try to blame politicians as best as we could because we desire to blame humans for things. But the fact is that this was a trauma. COVID was a trauma that, if anything, brought people together. There was a small amount of division, but not a lot. It was brought people together. The kind of trauma we're talking about in this French village now is more conflictual and divisive rather than cohesive. So we're going to see mixtures of that denial, depression, acceptance and struggling until finally there will be some kind of acceptance. Now, this will be very slow to come because we're looking at very long, complex legal processes against a large number of people.
Is there an urge and is there a psychological benefit, not benefit, but is there a psychological incentive or imperative to in some way blame the victims in a significant trauma like this? I remember many years ago, I used to race cars. And if somebody was badly injured, the conversations among the drivers would usually be about how in some way it was their fault, when often it wasn't. But I always thought it was a protective thing. It can't happen to me because I won't make those mistakes.
Yes, well, we desire to blame people for everything. We are very reluctant to blame systems or things other than people, like circumstances or, in the case of COVID, the actual virus. Now, which people we blame can be a little bit arbitrary. Clearly, in a situation like this, the perpetrators are 100% to blame, whatever the court might decide or who they were. Rather than victims being in any way responsible for what happens. But psychologically, we do look for shortcuts to try and sort things out. And sometimes we alight upon the wrong person to whom we attribute responsibility. And that's because we struggle with ambivalence. We struggle with the idea of shades of grey as well. We struggle with the implication that maybe all humans are capable of very bad acts, because that would mean that we were too. So we do tend to focus on somebody, not always the right person, and we tend to attribute all the blame to them. And we're not very good at seeing blame as more disseminated, or perhaps not even attributable to a person at all. Now, in a circumstance like the one you're talking about in this French town, there are clearly people involved, and the court will decide which people are or are not responsible or engaged in criminal acts. But we do tend to look for people to blame at all times, even in circumstances where there is no really obvious person to blame at all.
As we process the trauma, what's the balance between professional assistance, be that counselling, psychological help, psychiatric help, versus our looser and more informal organic network of friends, family and community?
In general terms, our looser, more organic network of family, friends and community are easily the best resources available to us to cope with trauma and with difficulty. So, for example, for people who experience trauma or difficult situations at work, it is quite right that we believe our colleagues are the only ones who really understand and can offer us the best support. However, if those informal networks don't work, it is important that the door is open for more formal psychological help. There's really no evidence of benefit of, if you like, foisting counselling or foisting psychotherapy on people before they have exhausted their informal networks. That indeed can be harmful. So we need to rely on people's own strengths and resilience. And I think we saw a lot of resilience during COVID as well. But the door needs to be left open for if those resources are not enough. And the problem, the big problem with a situation like that in this French village is that those community and informal resources have been undermined and questioned by fairly widespread involvement in the events being investigated.
What about then whether or not you dwell on the trauma? Because we've seen there are instances of things like the Goethe effect, where the discussion of a topic can actually, instead of guiding people away from it, it can foster the very behaviour that you were hoping wouldn't occur. Is there an element of the same, that in dwelling on something, you keep it alive, or do you process it and act as catharsis?
Well, people's cognitive style varies enormously like this. And I think we'll all know people who came through traumatic events, sometimes very traumatic childhoods, for example, and appear entirely unscathed by it and aren't repressing, but have somehow processed it themselves. Other people, however, really struggle with that because of their circumstances, their temperament, or just the way that they're built, or because people get re-traumatized. And again, in something like we're looking at in this French village, this will open up old traumas for other people as well, as it's talked about. However, it is, broadly speaking, better to talk about this, and a formal legal process is, broadly speaking, helpful and therapeutic in helping most people cope with something like this. It restores our sense of trust in community, a sense of justice, and so forth. For a small number of people, it is likely that not talking about it at all would be helpful. But for the generality, it is better that it is talked about in a responsible way, and it is talked about clearly and openly insofar as that is possible without compromising the court process.
Brendan Kelly, thank you very much. Brendan Kelly, Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin and author of the book Resilience.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.